Hey, a little Avicii to kick us off. Some of us are getting a wake-up call this morning. We felt like it was a little low in the room this morning as you came in here. So we want to give you a wake-up call. And it's part of what this series is doing as well. We are in this series called Game Changers, where 18 months ago, we kicked off this thing called the Game Change Campaign, because we wanted to fund some things that were important to the heart of God. And so many of us were giving things above and beyond what we have been giving, our normal giving. And the reason we gave it this name is because we saw this article really years ago in the New Yorker magazine by Malcolm Gladwell that talked about how David beat Goliath, and in order to be a game changer, you really have to play by different rules. And we've always kind of done that at Crosspoint, but it gave us a reason to continue to kind of move that forward. And so we're revisiting this theme at the halfway point because for many of us in this journey over the last 18 months, it's very much been a faith-stretching journey. But we also realize that there are many of us here who weren't able to be a part of that when it launched, and we want all of us to see how we can be game changers. So we're glad you're here this morning. My name's Kurt, by the way. It's great to meet you if we haven't had the chance to meet. And last week, we kicked off the series looking at how game changers aren't content with the status quo. You know, when you're a game changer, you don't look at the world and go, oh, it's good. You say, oh, gosh, there's some things that we really want to move the needle on. And today, I want us to look at how game changers are really some of the most unlikely people. All right, I mean, most of us, do you wake up feeling like a game changer today? Just out of curiosity, anybody wake up looking like feeling like a game changer? Anybody sleep in a Holiday Inn Express last night? Just out of curiosity. Well, you know, we probably don't wake up in the morning going, you know, man, I'm going to go change the game today. But many of you are doing that today. In fact, let's just do a little moment to connect this. If you're serving here at Crosspoint somewhere today, you're volunteering in kids later today, or you're a greeter, or you're in the band, just go ahead and stand for us real quick. Just go ahead and stand to your feet. Anybody who is in a serving role, look at this. These are game changers right here. These are people who woke up and said, I'm changing the game today. Let's give it up for them. Now, maybe you're not serving today, but you serve around here maybe next week or last week. Go ahead and stand to your feet if you serve somewhere around here on a regular basis. All right, yeah. Oh, man, yeah, look at this. These are game changers. Now, awesome, you can go ahead and have a seat, guys. This is about a third, maybe 40, 50% of the room. And so one of the things is, you know, these are people who are getting out of the status quo. They're saying, hey, I'm not just going to sit in the seats, but I'm gonna become a regular volunteer and apply my life to helping kids see Jesus for who he really is. Or I'm going to apply my life to turn knobs and buttons or maybe sing and play on the platform, and I'm going to be a game changer. Or maybe some of these people serve at coffee bar. They serve inside the front doors offering hospitality when people arrive. These are game changers. These are people who wake up and come into this place, say, I'm going to do something different. And these are people who move the needle. You know, we've been seeing game-changing stories all over the news from the last week, from Harvey, from some of the recovery in Houston. We're probably going to see many more coming out of Florida after today. And what's fascinating when you hear these stories is game changers, heroes, people who do, you know, what not everyone does, these are people who are very reluctant to take credit for what they're doing. Have you ever noticed that? Game changers usually don't even know that they're really changing the game, as we see in this story here with Mattress Mack. Take a look at this.
Good morning. A story that'll make you smile. We all need a smile, right? You mentioned this guy's name, and everybody here in Houston says, oh, yeah, Mattress Mack. Guy's got a 160,000-foot showroom, huge. And at the start of the storm, he was rescuing people. The only difference with his rescuing, he had a place to take them to.
I'm part capitalist and part social worker, and this is what I like to do.
Everything going all right?
Yes, sir.
You need anything?
No, sir.
Jim McInvale, a.k.a. Mattress Mack, has made a name for himself selling furniture. But it's his legacy of giving that's going to leave a permanent impression.
I'm worried about these people. I'm worried about the business. I'm worried about the community.
Sunday, he posted via social media that two of his gallery furniture stores would be open, not for business, but to provide shelter and food for people in need. Valencia Grace and her son Jalen are now among the hundreds of people who've taken up shelter in one of Mac's stores.
It's good to be here away from the flood because it would have got, when it started raining, it would have got all the way right here.
The water started to come in the house, and it was coming in so fast we had a matter of time to get out the house.
Grace and her son got in one of the trucks that Mac deployed to rescue people from the rising floodwater. He's also providing food, breakfast, lunch, and dinner for the evacuees.
We thank Mr. Mack for opening up his doors to us because we didn't know where our next meal was going to come from, or clothes on our back.
Mac estimates it costs $30,000 or $40,000 to keep his stores up and running through the crisis.
We can afford that, and what we can't afford is to cause these people to lose hope. We got to give them hope. This is what my parents would have done.
His record of community service would make his family proud. Every Christmas, his business has provided furniture to families in need. He also donates his furniture to make over teachers' lounges in area schools.
It's a long way from New Orleans, and not just in miles. Yeah.
Even providing refuge isn't new to Mac. In 2005, he housed 200 of the Hurricane Katrina evacuees in his store. Several of the Katrina victims, like Jerry Burke, even landed a job there.
Need anything? You good?
2005 Katrina blew me in. Lost everything, didn't know where I was gonna go, what to do. And I came here and talked to Mac, and he sent me to HR, and the rest was history. He furnished my apartment, gave me everything that I needed to survive, plus a job. Totally life-changing for me and my family.
Some of Harvey's evacuees, like Roberta Lee, are paying it forward, helping out in the store.
Whatever he needed me to do, I was there. So now I'm like just answering the phones, directing people, you know, that come in that need help.
Even though the upcoming Labor Day weekend is an important one for the furniture business, Mac says he's not going to kick anyone out.
We're going to keep these folks here as long as they need to be here. They may be here 3 days, they may be here seven, who knows? We're here to help, and that's what we do. That's who we are.
And how about Mac here? Isn't that awesome? Yeah. You know, and he just answered the call like probably any of us would have answered the call, right? In fact, he's like, I'm not a hero. If you watch the rest of the story, he said, I'm not a hero. He just ran toward a problem. And he said, this is who we are. This is what we do. And in fact, another word for game changer is the word hero. And the word hero is fascinating. It actually comes from the word demigod. Demigod means not quite God, kind of a lesser God or a half God. And so a demigod is really somebody who doesn't have it all together. A demigod is somebody who doesn't have it all figured out. They're doing the best they can. They're bringing just enough. And in some way, somehow, God allows people through this person to experience his transcendent nature through what they're doing. And see, this is what game changers do. Game changers, they see what everybody else sees, but they don't do what everybody else does. There's kind of this counterintuitive swimming upstream that game changers do, and they're a little bit different than most. They see what everybody else sees, but they're not willing to just do what everybody else does. They get engaged. And so I want us to see today that, you know, when it comes to game changers, usually game changers are the most unlikely people. They're not people that you would expect. And so if you feel today like, man, I am not a candidate to be a game changer, well, what I hope you see today is that you can actually become one. In fact, here's one person's story who was generous enough to kind of share their involvement and why they engage here at Crosspoint. Take a look at Mary's story.
I came to Crosspoint because I have children and grandchildren here, and I think it's important as a family that we worship together. And I love the environment here. When I first came and saw all the young families and all the kids here, it was an amazing experience to see that many young adults bringing their kids to church. I thought that was wonderful. I serve in the toddler room because it's my favorite age. I love the ages between the 18 months and 3 years. It's the time when kids show their personalities, when they develop as real little people. And every day is an adventure for them. So you never know what you're going to see on Sunday, but they come in excited and happy to be here, and I love that age group. They're just, to me, it's the most fun age you can experience. And it doesn't take special skills. The kids are who they are. They come in, they're easy to work with. I mean, not everybody's going to have a great day every day, but most of the kids are here because they're happy to be in this environment. They love it. They come in, they like to play, they like music, they like Play-Doh. Anybody can do music, Play-Doh, and puzzles. And at this age, they're just beginning to understand what it means to have a friend. So they're making friends that are going to carry them through every phase of their life. As long as they're at church with the same group of kids, forward, these are our game changers. These are the kids that are going to make a difference in our world as they grow up. I see the parents here at Cross Point coming into this environment and seeing all these young families bringing their kids to church. To me, they are really game changers, because a lot of the mainline churches are not getting family units at church. And here I'm starting to see all these young adults who are really just getting started in life, committing themselves and their kids to a good life, a life that involves God and church and Jesus. And I think that's the game change this world needs right now. There's so much negative every day, and every Sunday these kids get a really good dose of positive, and I love that. I don't know that I'm a game changer. I hope I'm making a difference. And that's what I think everybody needs to think about in life. Did you make a difference? Were you a blessing? Were you a positive influence somewhere in your day? And that's what I hope I bring.
Now let's hear it from Mary. And thanks, Mary, for sharing your story. You know, game changers, they don't think consider themselves a game changer. They're very reluctant to own that name, and yet that's what they're doing. I want us to look at a character figure today, a profile that we find in the Bible that everybody's heard of, doesn't matter who you are, a guy by the name of Moses. And Moses, you know, there's so many movies made about Moses, and Moses really was an unlikely figure to be used by God. In fact, Moses was born at a time when Pharaoh, the leader of the Egyptian Empire, had just issued a decree where he basically said, you know, all boys that are born, in fact, any boys under the age of two, are to be murdered or to be killed, to be thrown into the Nile, so either crocodiles eat them or they drown. And this was kind of Pharaoh's way of controlling the population so the Israelites didn't, you know, outgrow his empire's population. And so he was acting out of fear. And so, you know, Moses' mom, she was very courageous. She actually put her little baby boy, baby Moses, in a basket, put pit or tar around the basket and floated it down the Nile River. And wouldn't you know who finds it? Pharaoh's daughter. She takes Moses in. She gives him a home. And Moses ends up growing up in Pharaoh's palace as an Israelite who had been a slave in the nation of Egypt. And so, you know, it probably had to be a little different for Moses growing up, because he was in a multiracial home, right? He was not an Egyptian. He was of an entirely different culture, and yet he was growing up in an Egyptian palace. Later on in Moses' life, when he was older, he had a moment where after he became an adult, he saw an Egyptian commander actually kind of torturing one of his Israelite country folk. And he gets so upset at how this Egyptian commander is treating, you know, his fellow countrymen, that he actually steps in and he murders the Egyptian commander. And as a result of that, Moses feels a lot of shame. He feels a lot of regret, and he does what probably many of us have had to do at some point in our life. He actually went back home to live. And as I was reading this, I thought, man, there are probably some of us here today who maybe have had to make that move, who have had that kind of experience where maybe, and we feel shame in that. You know, maybe something just unraveled in our life and we had to go home, and, you know, maybe it was something financially that broke down, or you went to school and had to pull out of school and you had to go back home, or maybe even, you know, had a terrible divorce and you had to go back home for a bit. Whatever the reason, you know, there's good news, because this didn't stop God from using Moses in amazing ways, just so you know. And so we pick up Moses' story in Exodus 3, and this is in the Cross Point app as well. If you want to follow along, you can go to This Week and hit this week's verse, and you'll find Exodus 3:1. It says, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush, and Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up." Now this has got to be fascinating for Moses, right? This bush is what we would call today lit, right? Now maybe a little different than the way we would refer, but this bush is the first lit thing in history, I believe. And Moses is fascinated by it. He's like, whoa, this bush is all lit up, and yet it's not burning up. There's fire. And so Moses does what anyone would do. It says, "So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up." And as a result of Moses' inquiry, as a result of his like, oh my word, I need to go check this out, he actually comes into an encounter with God and has a conversation with God. It says in verse 7, the Lord said, I've indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. Now let me just pause for a moment, because if you woke up this morning, and you woke up, and maybe you're suffering this morning. Maybe every day is a suffering moment for you. Maybe every day you wake up paralyzed with doubt or paralyzed with fear or something that, you know, depression, something that just constantly kind of gets you down. And you've prayed for God to take this away. My guess is the Israelites' prayer has been very similar to your prayer, where you're just saying, God, are you hearing my prayer? Are you seeing what's going on in my life? And I just want you to know that just because God hasn't moved on whatever you're praying about doesn't mean that God's not listening. When it says right here, you know, God says, I've seen the misery. I've heard the cries of my people. See, God hears our cries. And just because God hasn't moved on that thing yet doesn't mean he's not going to move. All right, and so for Moses, you know, he goes on and God says, now Moses, I want you to go. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Now I want you to imagine Moses for a moment here. All right, I mean, he's like, God, you're asking me to do what? He's like, you know, as crazy as this whole lit bush thing was, and the bush is on fire, but it's not burning up. I mean, you're asking me to do something, to go back to Pharaoh? That's even crazier than a bush being on fire. And so Moses' instinctive answer in this moment was no. Absolutely not. Not going to do it, God. Not a nope. No way. Absolutely. I'm going back to Midian. I'm living in Midian, God. And oh yeah, in case you forgot, I'm living back in my parents' basement, you know, playing Warcraft and eating Doritos all day. All right. I'm not necessarily the warrior in the making, not doing wax on, wax off. You know, I'm just sitting around getting fat playing Warcraft. It was the pre-Minecraft version, just so you know. All right. So he's like, I'm not doing it. I don't know why you're asking me to do this. And through this encounter, Moses gives God a whole bunch of excuses. And what's fascinating about these are both kind of interesting and fascinating and hilarious at times, the way Moses kind of responds to God. And probably for some of us, we kind of have some connectivity to these because we feel the same thing at times when God asks us to do something or to follow through on something for him. And so I want us to look at kind of Moses' excuses and then the way God responds to his excuses, because I think in looking at these might help us understand our role in what God is wanting us to do here at Crosspoint and what he's doing in the community and in the world. And so here's the first excuse that Moses gave. All right, chapter 3, verse 11, it says, "But Moses said to God, 'Who am I to go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?'" Now, I don't think this is like Moses doesn't know his name, right? He can come to the I Am journey if he's at that level, all right? He can join us next month if he needs to do that. I don't think he's like needing to find his driver's license to figure out who he is, or even that he was out drinking one night and he couldn't remember his name. I think what he's saying here is, God, do I really have what it takes? I mean, God, I'm not exactly at the prime of my life right now. People kind of would look at me and say, man, he's kind of had a rough patch in his life. And so God responds to Moses based on Moses' excuse right here in a really, really powerful way. Here's what God says. It says, and God says, I will be with you. And so, you know, he's like, hey, Moses, I'm not all that concerned with whether or not you really know what you have or who you are. He says, what's most important is that you know that I'm going to be with you. I'm going with you. I'm not calling you to do something on your own. And so Moses is probably thinking here, you know, his kind of excuse is, I don't really have the position, God. This thing you're asking me to do is pretty big, pretty bold. I mean, it's a pretty grand plan. I don't know that I have what it takes for this undertaking. And God's response is encouraging. You know, God's response is, hey, my presence can overcome any of your imperfections, Moses. And I think this is true for every single one of us here today. See, God's presence can overcome anything that we feel like disqualifies us, anything that we feel like, God, I don't know if I have what it takes right here. Yeah, I mean, I've got stuff wrong with me, and I'll have it all together. I mean, I think God wants us to know the same thing he told Moses. Hey, I can overcome any of your imperfections. And then Moses gives another excuse. Here's what he says. It says, then Moses said to God, suppose, which I love this word, he's like, suppose, God, as if God, I don't know if you've thought this all through. I mean, you got a lot going on in the world. I mean, there's hurricanes and all going on. I mean, I just want to point out, you know, in case you have, a few things have slipped your mind, I want you to think about what you're asking me to do, all right? I mean, just think about the courage it's going to take to go to Pharaoh, let alone go back to the Israelites, the people, my original people of origin. And he goes on, he says, suppose I go to the Israelites, and he says, okay, God, and I'm not committing to do this, by the way. I'm just hypothetically asking a question. Suppose I go to the Israelites And I say to them, the God of your father sent me to you. And they ask me just one simple question, God. And it's not even a really big question. It's not even theological. What if they just say, well, what's this God's name? What should I tell him? He's like, God, that question alone would stump me, all right? For some of us, this is why we don't like to serve in kids' environments. We're like, oh, what if the kids ask me a question? I don't know the answer. I don't want to look stupid. This is how Moses is feeling. Moses is like, what if they ask me your name and I don't have an answer? And God's response to Moses right here is so powerful, right? Because Moses is like, God, I don't feel equipped to answer on behalf of who you are. And for the very first time in recorded history, God tells us who he is, right? And he tells it to Moses, and then this has been passed down through the generations to us today. And it's amazing what he says. Look at how God responds. It says, and God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. You just tell them, I am sent me to you. Now, this may be one of the most beautiful definitions that we can find in the entire recorded scripture of the Bible about who God is. He's like, I am. And Moses is probably like, well, who are you? Doesn't really explain it. Well, he says, I'm everything you're going to need. He said, I'm the father to the fatherless. I'm the encourager to the down and out. I'm the comforter to the brokenhearted. I'm the hope to the hopeless. I'm the strength to the powerless. I'm the deliverer to those who are in bondage. I'm whatever you need me to be in that moment. And so I think Moses here is probably thinking, God, I don't have the power, man. This thing you're asking me to do, I don't really have the power within me to do this, to take on this undertaking. And I think God is saying to Moses here, I'm not so interested that you know what you're not, is that you know who I am. This is what God wants Moses to see right here. He says, it's not what you have within you. See, we focus on our weaknesses too much, right? We focus on what we don't have. And God just said, I just want you to focus on who I am. In fact, Marcus Buckingham, some of us heard him at the Global Leadership Summit a few weeks ago. He talks about this. He says, when you study lastingly successful people, you find that the one thing they have in common is they focus on their strengths and they manage around their weaknesses. See, the bottom line is we all have weaknesses, right? We all have places where we don't exactly have what's needed, and none of us are good at everything. And so many times we disqualify ourselves from what we can actually do because, you know, we see what we don't bring to the table instead of seeing everything that we do bring to the table, and it paralyzes us. I mean, God's saying to Moses, yeah, you're right. You don't have everything. You don't have it all together. There's some outages in your life. There's some things that you may see as weaknesses, but that doesn't stop me. All I'm asking you to do is to follow through on what I'm asking you to do, Moses, because I am. Don't be so concerned with what you're not. Moses goes on. He gives another excuse to God. See this in the next chapter. It says, Moses answered, well, what if they don't believe me? What if they don't believe me when I say, well, I am who I am. That's who this God is. Or even worse, he says, what if they listen to me, and they say, the Lord did not appear to you? What if they question my experience with you, God? And then God did something that was both fascinating and kind of alarming, at least to some of us in this moment right here. He actually says to Moses, he says, hey, Moses, what is that in your hand? And Moses had a staff in his hand. He says, Moses, take that thing in your hand. And this is like a pattern God begins to do. He begins to reveal himself through this staff to God in multiple ways over the next few years. He says to Moses, Moses, don't you throw that staff on the ground. And Moses throws it on the ground, and what does it become? Yeah, most of us know. It becomes a snake, right? Now, I don't know about you, but my little Birkenstocks would have run about as fast as they could run if that had happened. I was just telling my brother last night, we stayed in a vacation home a few years ago down in Florida about where the hurricane's coming through. They were still recovering from a previous hurricane. And we had a great time, and they'd redone this vacation home. And the property manager stopped by, and he was telling us, he said, yeah, it's crazy to believe. A year ago, this room was 10 feet underwater. I went, oh, man, you guys done a great job restoring it. He said, and there were snakes hanging from all these chandeliers in the room. I didn't sleep the rest of the trip, all right? I'm in my mind, I mean, I don't know what you get fearful of. There's not many things I'm fearful of. Snakes I don't really deal with, all right? Maybe for you it's spiders. You're like, oh, my word, a toddler. When I see a toddler, I run. That fear, that freaks me out. I don't know what it is. But for Moses, it was a snake, all right? There's something that brought fear in him. And so God asked him to throw his staff on the ground. It becomes a snake. And then you know what God asked him to do next? He says, Moses, I want you to reach down and pick that snake up. Now, I don't know how long this exchange really took in real life, right? Because for me, I would have been like, God, I need a little more than just reach down and pick it up. Right? I need to know exactly what's going to happen when I reach down and grab the snake. All right? And so, but for Moses, all we know is he's asked to pick up this snake. And the moment he reaches down and picks it up, it turns right back into a staff. And this was just a simple explanation or affirmation for Moses of who really holds the power. God said, hey, when I ask you to do something, trust me, I'm the one that holds the power. See, for whatever reason, Moses didn't feel like he had the position. He didn't feel like he had the power. And it seems like right here he's saying to God, I don't have the skills. I don't know what you see in me, but I'm not a leader. I mean, I don't do well out in front of people. I'm kind of a behind the scenes guy. I don't really have the organizational ability to pull off what I think this undertaking's gonna take. And I don't really have that much knowledge. I'm not really a spiritual person, I'm pretty new to this whole thing. Let me just ask you a question. If you've ever felt any of these things that Moses felt, if you've ever had some of the same thoughts that Moses is experiencing, let me ask you a question. If God's not concerned with what I can't do, should I be? I mean, if God's not concerned with what I bring to the table, should I be? I mean, it's somewhat of a rhetorical question, but I think the answer is no, right? I mean, if God's not surprised by it, if he's not concerned by it at all, I mean, God knows your limits. He knows your weaknesses. He knows your limitations. In fact, the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians, he actually talks about how God's strength is made perfect in my weakness. So if God's not worried about where I have weaknesses, should I be? See, God's next response, Moses' next response to God, he says, pardon your servant, Lord. I love this phrase. He keeps using this phrase, pardon your servant, Lord. And I love this because it's kind of like Moses is saying, God, you know, I don't know much about you, but if you're the kind of God that tends to get frustrated with people that drag their feet a little bit, then you're probably really frustrated with me right now. It's kind of what he's saying. And so he's like, pardon your servant, Lord, but I've never been eloquent. I've never been eloquent in the past, nor since you've spoken to me. He's like, I'm not one of those, like, I have a dream kind of guys. And everybody's watching going, we get it, Moses. We've seen that. We don't see that in you. He says, I'm slow to speech. He's like, I'm slow to tongue. And then God asked Moses some very, very pointed questions. Take a look at him here. He says, Moses, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? He says, Moses, who is it, just out of curiosity, that gives them the sight to the blind? Is it not I, the Lord? I mean, it's like God's like saying, hey, Moses, remember, I'm the one that actually put the mouth on the human body. Right? You're worried about what you're going to say. Remember the power that I hold. He says, go now. Moses, just go. I will teach you what to say and how to speak. I mean, Moses is just filled with excuses. He's like, God, I don't know that I have the position. I know that I have the power. I really don't know that I have the skills. And right here, I think he's saying, I don't have the words. And what you're asking me to do, God, I don't have the words. And you think God's surprised by that? It's like God saying, hey, I want you to know that the weakness that you think is a weakness, actually, I don't really see that as a weakness. See, sometimes we think we have a weakness, but what God's really saying is, hey, your weakness just sets the stage for my strength to be displayed. Your weakness just sets the stage for my greatness to be displayed in the world. And see, I think the same thing is true for you and I. I think this is what God's asking every single one of us today. Will you step up? Will you be a game changer? I'm not asking you to be a game changer because you have all the skills and because God's so impressed with everything we bring to the table. No, God's saying, I just want to put on display my greatness through your life. And then Moses kind of wraps this whole thing up, which I love. It says, but Moses said, use this phrase again, but pardon your servant, Lord, would you please send someone else? It's like his last effort, right? He's like, please, if there's anybody else, I'm going to try it one more time, God. Is there anybody else that can fit the bill? Now, what I love about Moses right here is Moses, he's somebody who understands, I don't have the power. I don't have the position. I don't have the skills. I don't have the words to be a game changer. But guess what? This is not an obstacle for God. Because God's not asking Moses to follow through on what he's asking him to do because of his position or because of his power or because of his skills or because of his words. And if you think about it, these really are the pillars of success in our culture today, right? I mean, the professional world, these are the pillars of success, We say, if you got those four things, you can be a game changer. But see, when it comes to God, these are not the secret ingredients that God's looking for. See, Moses had something that every single one of us have within us. See, Moses wasn't eloquent. Moses was simply available. Moses chose to be willing. And you too, we can choose to be willing. I mean, right here today, we can say, God, I'm gonna put my hands out, and I don't know exactly how this is, this kind of the universal posture for God. I'm just open to what you have for me. God, I'm willing. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know how it's going to go, but I'm willing. And I just wonder what form our life would take if we were just a little more willing. We were downtown last weekend on the Circle with our family, and I looked up. We just started the Game Changer series, looked up and saw this image right here, took a photo of it. Is United Way poster said, you can be a game changer. All you have to do is raise your hand. You say, God, I'm willing. So I want us to take out our connection card. I want to walk us through a couple things that God may be stirring on us. And take out your connection card. I also want you to take out this volunteer card and this game changers envelope. Just hold these in your hand. And, you know, as we go through this series, this is what we're asking. God, am I willing? We're not going to tell you what you're to do. This is between you and God figuring out, God, what are you calling me to do? But we are asking every single person who calls Crosspoint home, are you willing to step into the role that God has for you? And so, you know, as you think about this envelope, I'm not even necessarily asking you to respond on this today. All right, this is something that we're asking for you to process over this series. And come November or October 1st, we're going to ask you everybody to return one of these. And for many of us, we made game changer commitments back a year and a half ago. And so if you made a previous commitment, what we're asking you is if you're on pace in your giving or what you're doing and God's just saying to you, hey, just keep doing what you're doing, then maybe that's how you're going to respond on this envelope throughout this month. All right, maybe for some of you, you know, you've been blessed and you've already fulfilled your game change commitment. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe God's not going to say this. Maybe God's going to say, hey, I got more I want you to do. And so you're going to say, man, there's more I want to commit to over these next 18 months. You know, there may be some of us, about 60% of us are behind in our giving through the Game Change campaign. Or only a few percentage of us have not started. But if you haven't started, it's a great time to start. Or if you're behind, it's a great time to catch up. But maybe what you're going to do, maybe what God's going to say to you is just, hey, just try to find what you can do and fulfill that. Maybe you need to adjust your commitment. We realize life happens as we go through these things. And so don't let what you haven't done paralyze you from being a part of this in the future. And then we also realize there's a whole bunch of us that weren't even around when we launched the Game Change campaign. And so for you, you know, maybe God's going to nudge you and say, hey, you have a chance to be part of the back half of this and make an 18-month commitment. So you're going to make a commitment, and God's going to give you a dollar figure, and you're going to say, above what I normally give, or maybe I don't give, and I want to start investing in the Game Change around here. You're going to come to a dollar figure, and you're going to walk that out over the next 18 months. And so we're just asking you to prayerfully consider what your role is in that. All right, see, the work is big, and it requires every single one of us, regardless, you know, the sacrifice is what we're going after. The dollar amounts are different. But we just want everybody to be engaged in what God wants to do in us and through us. Now, what I really want us to focus in on today is this card right here, this volunteer card. I want you to hold this card in your hand. And we put the serving scoreboard up last weekend. For us to get to the early weekend service to launch Thursday nights in 4 weeks, we're down. Last week, we had 113 volunteers that are needed. We began to trickle this down a bit. In the next week, we're really going to see this come down because for many of you, you signed up to do a first serve today. Your first servant today, and if you come in into that role after you give it a shot, this is going to come down. We already went down 9 since last weekend. So we have a lot of serving opportunities for us to get engaged in here at Crosspoint. This is serving 2 times a month on one team. And so as you look at that, you might just say, well, where's a place that I can plug in? You can see what the needs are in different areas. And for some of you, it might be serving on Sunday, not on Thursday, because we have people serving Sunday that are actually moving to Thursday night. All right, and so we, you know, and let me just be clear about what this requires. We're talking like 2 or 3 hours a month serving. All right, if you serve 2 times a month for hour to hour and a half, that's 3 hours, maybe 4 a month. You spend more time on Facebook scrolling through photos than that a month. All right, and so, you know, Moses, he didn't feel like he brought anything to the table, absolutely nothing, but he was willing. So for 50% of us in this room right now. Are not currently serving on one of our teams at Crosspoint. You may be brand new, and so that kind of disqualifies. I mean, you're qualified to serve, but if you're here and you call Crosspoint home, The ask today is, are you willing? Are you willing to give something a shot? Because in 5 weeks, we're heading into brand new territory. We're taking what we do on Sunday, and we're transplanting that and reproducing it on Thursday to create an additional avenue for people to experience God in new ways. And so, you know, there are all sorts of opportunities to be game changers. So if you don't currently serve anywhere, I just want you to take this card. I want you to put your name on here. I'm going to fill it out with you. Just right here on the top, Kurt. You can write your name down. All right. And then you can fill in your email address. This is really important to be legible. This is where a lot of times we have a breakdown because we can't read email addresses. A best contact number, if you want to give that to us, we won't bug you, but it's a way for us to text you if we need to, if we've got something we need to check in with you on. Then as you look over that list, can we put that list up one more time, Adejua? The scoreboard. As you look over this list, where's that place that you can plug in? Where's that area that you're like, you know, and if you let me give you a little context of this. If you've ever coached a team, if you ever coached kids, or if you've ever led Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, you probably need to be in kids. You need to take your coaching ability and you need to turn that into building into kids on things that'll last for eternity. All right, because God's wired you to do that. And so you need to be involved in one of our kids' environments. All right, if you've ever played an instrument, a guitar, a drums, a keyboard, if you ever sang with a group, if you ever auditioned for anything, man, you need to consider being a part of our creative team. You need to sign up to do an audition. I mean, you'll come on a rehearsal night and you'll audition with the band and they'll help you grow toward being able to engage when you're ready. All right, this is what it means to be game changers. If you are really big in customer service, all right, if you're just really big in customer service side, you probably need to be out serving coffee or welcoming people at the front door or serving in kids' check-in. All right, this is where you can plug in. And so as you think about that, as you think about how you're wired, okay, where am I willing? Just identify one or two places and mark those on here. One or two teams you're willing to say, hey, I'm willing to give it a shot here and try a first serve. And then mark a date that you're willing to do a first serve, that you're willing to shadow. And we'll be in contact with you, and of your choices, we'll say, hey, here's where we really have a need. Would you consider this? And we'll sync you up to give it a shot. Right? The point is just pick one. Pick one if you're willing and serve two times a month and be a game changer. Every now and then I'll have somebody say to me, you know, you're like, well, why two times a month, Kurt? Well, this is what we believe builds community. Every now and then somebody will say to me, they'll say, well, Kurt, I just can't commit to serving two times a month. I mean, I've got so much going on the weekend. I mean, I told them, I'll just be available. Just let me know when I'm needed. See, here's the thing. We're not asking for a lot when it comes to serving. We're talking 3-4 hours at best a month. You know, we have 4 kids. We have 3 kids in sports right now. I mean, weekends are a little crazy. But I just want to point something out that may not be obvious to us. You know, so many times we say, well, you know, I got all these commitments. I got to make sure I'm at every game and, you know, get my kids to everything on the weekend. I want you to just think for a moment, if that's you, what that says to your kids. I mean, just think for a moment what it says when you can say, hey, I'll make every sporting event on the weekend. But when it comes to loving God and serving others, I can't really commit to that. I mean, I want you to just think about the posture and what your nonverbal is saying about what you're bending your life to. Now, I'm not saying sports aren't important. I'm just saying, do I want to make sure the things that are important are in my schedule? See, the cool thing about this is God's not asking us to save the world by ourselves. It's just saying, I'm willing, God. I'm willing. Like the little boy that had fish, right? He had his little Happy Meal from Long John Silver's. Remember him in the Bible? He said, God, I got a couple fish and a few loaves of bread. I don't know if you can do anything with this. And God looks at that and he goes, ah, willingness. Yeah, I can do a lot with willingness. I just want us to see the resume of a game changer is not what you expect. Game changers are unlikely people. Game changers see what everybody else sees, but they're not willing to do what everybody else is doing. They hold up their hands. They say, God, whatever you have for me, I'm in. I'm in. Count me in. Let's go ahead and stand. I want to pray for us. And if you're willing, you know, I don't know what God's doing in the room right now, but if you're willing, you know, maybe you just want to hold your hands out like this, and this is the universal posture of God. I want whatever you have for me. I'm willing for whatever you're calling me to. And maybe you just physically want to hold your hands up like this. And if not, that's cool. And just real quick before we pray. I know sometimes we get to this segment of the service and some of us like to go get our kids and we like to, you know, get out ahead of the line or, you know, maybe you got to bolt out of here right away. And I just want to ask you to stay in this moment and maybe see what God wants to do in this moment. And if you got to volunteer, we totally get it. If you got to get out to your volunteer role, you can head out. Or if you're really urgent, get out of here. We don't want to make you, you know, late. But I want to ask you to commit to being here for these next like 8 or 10 minutes. Because maybe God's not going to do something to you, but maybe it's the person next to you that you're interrupting when you slide out. So let's just have a moment to see what God wants to do. God, as a symbol of availability, we're just kind of standing in this posture of hands open, ready. God, we don't know exactly what this means or what it's going to look like. There may even be some fear and insecurity for us. But God, we just ask you to make it clear on what our role is and what you're doing here, what you want to invite us into, and what you want to do in and through us, God. We just want to be open. We want to be in a posture of availability. And God, we want to do what great game changers do. We want to give you all the glory. We want to give you all the credit. We want your power to be displayed through us, because it's certainly not us. God, we thank you for Moses. We thank you for stories like Moses. We thank you for his willingness. God, we thank you for Jesus, for his willingness to go to the cross on our behalf so that we can have hope. And Father, you wrote an amazing story through the life of Moses, through people like Jesus, who are just willing. And God, we just pray that you would begin to write an amazing story right here, right now, in us.